Hello, welcome to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Sunday, July 6th, 2025. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sunsounds of Arizona. We begin the second hour by reading the obituaries list. Today's list includes the following names: Martha D. Clifford, William Crosby Conger, Linda Lee Culver, Martha Mary Fisher, Gregory Grindy, Diane Callis, Sylvia Jambrick Kane, Paul Joseph Kennedy, Ted J. Thayer, Elizabeth Beverly Witter, and Clayton Leroy Worst. Sunsounds of Arizona extends its condolences to the families and friends of the individuals listed in today's obituaries. And now we'll turn to the economy section of the paper. And it looks like the first article is entitled, Five Economic Trends to Watch in Arizona as Signals Appear Mixed at Mid-Year. This was an article written by Russ Wiles, who is a columnist for the Arizona Republic. Americans have had a lot to digest about economics so far this year. Tariffs, on-and-off recession anxiety, slower job growth, and more layoffs all factor among the key negatives. They have been partly counterbalanced by a booming stock market and falling gasoline prices and other favorable developments. The economy at mid-year is flashing mixed signals. Here are some indicators that are worth watching over the second half of the year 2025. The GDP turns lower, so is a recession coming? Well, the most comprehensive measure of the economy is the gross domestic product, or GDP. It slipped 0.5% in the first quarter of 2025. That's according to the Federal Bureau of Economic Analysis report that was released on June 26th. That follows a GDP increase of 2.4% in the fourth quarter of 2024. So the latest reading marked the first quarterly decline since GDP slumped over the first 6 months of 2022. And like then, it will raise recession speculation. The latest decrease reflected a rise in imports, which are a subtraction in the GDP calculation, along with a drop in government spending. The import jump likely reflected many businesses accelerating their purchases of foreign products before the tougher tariffs kick in under President Trump. Some Arizona small businesses said they did the same thing. Next, we have employment slowing, but it is still positive. The nation's unemployment rate stood at a respectable 4.2% in May, according to the most recent update. Arizona's jobless rate was even lower, 4.1%, and the Metro Phoenix gauge was even better still at 3.7%. However, job opportunities have cooled off lately. For example, Arizona's jobless rate 1 year earlier, back in May of 2024, well, it was 3.4%, and job growth here has slowed to a trickle. Around Arizona and Metro Phoenix, jobs are being created at a pace much slower than we have seen historically. That's a quote from Dennis Hoffman, an economist at Arizona State University. Layoffs this year have been trending higher. Employers already have reported 6,076 layoffs in Arizona so far in 2025, including several big ones, up from 5,227 over the first 6 months a year ago in 2024. Well, some 45% of Americans say they are worried about being laid off owing to an economic downturn. That's up from 40% last quarter. That's according to the newly released survey from Allianz Life Insurance. And even more Americans fear a near-term recession. That would be 63%. Next, we have inflation under control, but oil prices are helping. So inflation has come down dramatically over the past couple of years, though it is still not low enough to convince the Federal Reserve to cut interest rates. The latest reading was a 2.4% increase in consumer prices nationally over the 12 months through May. But tariffs pose a considerable risk of higher prices in the near term, according to Sean Ewan, who is a research scholar at ASU's L. William Seidman Research Institute. He added that U.S. inflation could end the year close to 3%. The inflation trend has been more moderate in Arizona. The Phoenix inflation increase was just 0.3% over the 12 months through April, which is the lowest urban inflation rate among the 23 metro areas that are tracked by the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics. Phoenix area inflation is measured every other month. Now, one key factor keeping a lid on inflation has been fuel cost. Oil prices have dropped roughly 10% since the start of 2025. Regular unleaded gasoline was down 23 cents a gallon on average over the 12 months through June 23, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. But Hoffman said that other pricing pressures will likely remain for a prolonged period, such as those from steel and aluminum tariffs as they work their way through the system. Next, we have the rally continuing in the stock market. Now, the stock market returned more than 20% in both 23 and in 2024, and it's heading for another gain in 2025, with major gauges like the Standard & Poor's 500 recently hitting all-time highs. The S&P 500 stood about 4.6% higher for the year-to-date through June 27th. Now, many investors try to anticipate trends 6 to 9 months in advance when making buying and selling decisions. The ongoing rally suggests they are not overly concerned about a recession or a corporate profit slump ahead. Stock prices are one of 10 leading or predictive economic indicators that are tracked by the Conference Board. Overall, most of the other signals, including consumer sentiment and factory orders, have been weakening so far this year. The Conference Board, which is a business think tank, anticipates soft economic growth, somewhere around 1.6% for 2025, but no recession. Then we have Phoenix home prices treading water. So far, 2025 has been an uneventful year for residential real estate. Phoenix single-family home prices were up about 1.3% on average over the 12 months through April, according to an index tracked by S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller. Home prices nationally, they were up 3.4% on average. Home sales have slowed in recent years, and construction has pulled back modestly. Yet prices have not fallen, partly owing to limited inventory. Look for further subpar sales activity and prices to increase only moderately over the rest of the year. So far in 2025, interest rates have been mostly steady, with rates on 30-year Treasury bonds little changed. President Trump has been arguing for lower interest rates, but the Federal Reserve has refused to oblige until inflation softens further. The most recent Fed interest rate cut came last December. And that was Russ Wiles' article, Five Economic Trends to Watch in Arizona as Signals Appear Mixed at Mid-Year. Our second article from the economy section, Costco test fast charge EV stations in Florida. Transportation is evolving, and Costco plans to evolve with it, according to Electric, an electric vehicle news site. The retailer is one of the few retailers in America where consumers can get an affordable slice of pizza just a few steps away from furniture and produce and technology. Costco warehouses are essentially one-stop shops for everything people need for their daily lives. The retailer even offers gasoline at certain locations via their gas stations. And now, Costco is going to host fast EV charging stalls from Electric ERA. That's an EV charging company, and it's at a location in Northport, Florida. It's part of a collaboration that could change the way American Costco shoppers charge their EVs. Solving the electric vehicle charging infrastructure issue in America may seem like rocket science, and that's why a team of former SpaceX engineers, the founders of Electric Era, might be the ideal group to tackle the lack of reliably fast EV chargers in the country. Electric Era provided Costco with 6 EV fast charging stalls in just 54 days. Now, those charging stalls are capable of recharging a battery by up to 80% of its total capacity in 20 to 60 minutes. So, people using those chargers could theoretically park their vehicles in a Costco parking lot, shop at Costco, and return to their EV that has a replenished battery. Positive, non-Tesla charging experiences can be few and far between as the EV market share drastically outpaces the amount of available, reliable chargers in America. More than 9 million new EVs were registered in 2024, according to Experian. Several automakers are seeing record EV sales in 2025. Costco's experiment could lead to future partnerships with Electric Era on similar charging stations across its retail sites. There are at least 531 Costco warehouses in the United States, according to a 2023 article by Visual Capitalist. Adding charging stations to Costco parking lots nationally could result in thousands of new fast charging stalls in America for EV owners, and that would be independent from any federal investments or incentives. Tesla has partnered with several automakers, including Hyundai, Kia, General Motors, Chevrolet, Cadillac, Honda, Acura, and more, in order to allow Tesla supercharger compatibility via adapters. This partnership is good for non-Tesla EV owners, but it means Tesla superchargers are in demand. If Costco chooses to sign additional contracts with Electra ERA, the retailer's parking lots could become extremely beneficial to customers and EV owners. And that was the article, Costco Test Fast Charge EV Stations in Florida. Our third article from the economy section of the paper, Companies Returning Manufacturing to United States, by Molly Davis for the Nashville Tennessean from Nashville, Tennessee. Most clothing sold in the United States makes a long journey around the world before it lands, most often in a big box store. To create items as simple as a t-shirt or a pair of jeans, cotton grown in the United States might be shipped to China to be made into fabric, and then it's sent elsewhere to be sewn into clothing before being shipped back to the United States to be sold. This sprawling global manufacturing chain is used by companies who want to drive costs down and maximize their profits. But it also means an entire industry is dependent on imports from other countries. As the trade policies laden with tariffs continue to evolve, many consumers are left wondering how United States manufacturing can be revitalized. For clothing brands based in the United States, like Nashville's Imogene Plus Willie, making clothes locally means building a different kind of supply chain from scratch. Imogene Plus Willie started its cotton project with cotton grown in Cortland, Alabama. They paid a premium for 22 acres of the crop to secure a high-grade fiber and invest in the farm's regenerative farming techniques. Next, the raw materials were sent to Hill Spinning Mill, in Thomasville, North Carolina, to be made into yarn. Garment factory Dignity Apparel in New Tazewell, Tennessee, took it from there. So with garment factories in Iowa and Tennessee, Dignity Apparel is part of a small cohort of companies that are keeping the jobs, machinery, and infrastructure needed to make clothing in the United States. Ultimately, for us, it comes down to being able to pay better wages and provide great benefits for all the folks who are under one of our roofs. That's a quote from Matt Davis, the company's Director of Business Development. Now, the denim industry also has been largely exported out of the United States in recent years. Integral to the denim-making process was Mount Vernon Mills in Tryon, Georgia. The mill created and dyed the denim used to make the blue jeans. The indigo supply came from Stony Creek Colors. That's a startup company working to produce natural dyes at scale. All of those details, from natural dyes to fair treatment of workers, were important to the leadership team at Imogene Plus Willie. CEO K.P. McNeil of Imogene and Willie said, quote, "We never looked for the easy way," unquote. And that was companies returning manufacturing to U.S. Well, we're coming up on 17 minutes past the hour. We finished up with the economy section. It's time for us to move on over and take a look at what's happening in sports. The cover story from the front page of the sports section is entitled Off-Season Breakdown, Suns Four Areas to Watch. This was written by Dwayne Rankin for the Arizona Republic. The Phoenix Suns remain under construction, with more change coming as teams can officially begin signing players to contracts on Sunday, July 6th. Four-time All-Star Devin Booker is expected to sign his two-year extension with the Suns for $150 million. He's been the one constant for a franchise that won just 36 games last season, and they missed the playoffs for the first time since 2019-20, which was the last time it had a losing record. Phoenix is in rebuild, or reset mode, with its fourth head coach in four seasons, and it is without Kevin Durant, who was traded to the Houston Rockets as part of a blockbuster deal before the 2025 NBA draft. Now, the Suns are not done reshaping the roster, but they believe they are acquiring talent to fit an identity of being long and athletic, playing hard, and being physical. They are not a championship contender, especially coming out of the West. Oklahoma City became the second youngest team to win an NBA championship. But still, Phoenix has reason to be optimistic, to the point that reaching the play-in tournament this upcoming 25-26 season isn't out of the question. So here is what to track with the Suns in the months leading up to training camp. Chris Paul received just as much credit as Booker for the Suns reaching the 2021 finals, if not more. Durant was their best player in his 2.5 seasons in Phoenix. But there is no question whose team this is now. Booker worked closely with the Suns during the process of hiring former Cleveland Cavaliers assistant Jordan Ott and approved Mike Budenholzer's replacement. The franchise's all-time leading scorer has been involved with the reshaping of the Suns. Can he now lead this new-look, largely youthful group to a respectable season that Phoenix can build upon? Booker will likely have to remain the team's main facilitator after averaging a career-high 7.1 assist last season. Jalen Green is averaging 3.4 assist for his career. The Suns acquired Dylan Brooks and Jalen Green from the Rockets in the Durant trade. Green is certainly capable of filling most of those 26.6 points that Durant averaged last season. Booker will certainly get his too, but This team needs a leader. Booker is entering his 11th NBA season. He's no longer that 18-year-old babyface rookie. He's now bearded up, and he has even more say on what happens with this team. He will have to take more clutch shots, handle more doubles, and show a willingness to compete defensively on repeated trips, not just every now and then. Booker displayed vocal leadership late last season when everything crashed and burned, but he must carry that over and take it to another level. Don't let his mellow post-game demeanor fool you. Booker has ripped into a player, but that only goes over when setting a high standard. He must monitor personalities like the fiery Brooks, who has always fiercely competed against him, particularly when playing for the Memphis Grizzlies. Booker has young players, Ryan Dunn, Oso Iguodaro, and Mark Williams, along with rookies Kaman Maluk and Kobe Bray and Rashear Fleming. They will be watching his every move. He must set the tone, must keep teammates involved, be aligned with the head coach, and deliver in winning time. It's a large ask, but Booker must be that guy and more for the Suns. This is his team again. The Suns finished last season 25th in rebounding and 28th in offensive rebounding. Now they should be much improved on the glass with the additions of the seven-footers, Williams and Malak. They also give the Suns job threats they lacked last season. Williams averaged a double-double of 15.3 points on 60% shooting and 10.2 rebounds to join Milwaukee Bucks All-NBA forward Giannis Antetokounmpo and Los Angeles Clippers center Ivak Zubek as the only players to average at least 15 points and 10 rebounds on better than 60% shooting last year. But injuries have been Williams' toughest opponent. He was set to join the Los Angeles Lakers in a deal before the 2025 trade deadline, but a failed physical nixed the trade and sent him back to the Charlotte Hornets. He's played only 106 games in three seasons, so if Williams is healthy for, say, 60-plus games, the Suns have someone who will consistently eat on the offensive boards this season. Williams averaged 3 offensive boards last season. The Suns, as a team, averaged only 9.5. If Williams experiences another injured-filled season, the Suns will need Malak to play major minutes. At 7 feet 1 inch with a 7-foot 6-inch wingspan, Malak already has the physical gifts. He put in work on the offensive glass in this one season at Duke. Nearly half of his rebounds were on that end of the floor. Malak totaled 257 rebounds in 39 games, with 107 coming on offense. He needs to improve his strength, but he weighed 252 pounds at the NBA Combine in Chicago. He showed a willingness to play physical at Duke, but he's now going to face grown men in the NBA. And then there's Nick Richards. The Suns fully guaranteed the final year of his contract at $5 million, according to league sources, confirming that to the Arizona Republic. Now, Richards is also a seven-footer. He averaged 9.5 points and a career-best 8.6 rebounds in his 36 games with the Suns, after coming over from Charlotte in a deal before the 2025 trade deadline. While he would be a viable big for a number of NBA teams needing a center, the Suns need a third big, especially when the top one is injury-prone and the likely backup is a rookie. Now, about the rookies. Well, the Suns worked the draft to land Malak, Fleming, and Bray, or Bree, B-R-E-A. Each one brings specific skill sets. Malak is a rim protector. He had 1.3 blocks last season, a lob threat, and an offensive rebounder. Fleming is a four-man. He measured at 6 feet 8 1/4 inches without shoes at the combine. He can knock down, catch, and shoot threes. He's 39% from distance last season at St. Joseph. Shooting 53% from the field, Fleming effectively runs the pick and roll, the pick and pop, and has good hands and feet on defense. Bree is a wing player who, at nearly 6 feet 6 inches, cooks from the outside. He connected on 43% of his threes in his final collegiate season at Kentucky after leading the nation in three-point shooting at an insane 49.8% at the previous season at Dayton. So they each address a need, but Malik, Fleming, and Bree will be rookies. The Suns must project how quickly they can develop in determining what to do with Grayson Allen, Royce O'Neal, and Iguodaro. Moving Allen or O'Neal will certainly help in getting below the second tax apron, and Suns first-year general manager Brian Gregory has stressed player development. The Thunder proved the importance of that with their talent, particularly the role players, growing and improving. Phoenix appears set on getting younger and more athletic. They not only have rookies who fit that mode, but they will push for minutes and make even guys like Dunn, who started 44 games out of his 74, level up. Gregory has been grilled with questions since being elevated from vice president of player programming to general manager, replacing James Jones, who shifted to senior advisor. Being a Michigan State guy, like team owner Matt Ishbia, both of them were part of the men's 2000 national championship team, put his promotion under even more scrutiny. Gregory served as an assistant under Hall of Famer Tom Izzo, and Ishbia was a walk-on player. Gregory then faced criticism for how the Suns handled the Durant trade in not getting more for the superstar forward and all-time great. So along with Green and Brooks, the Suns landed the 10th pick that became Malik and 5 second-round selections. And that was the article by Dwayne Rankin entitled Off-Season Breakdown, Suns 4 Areas to Watch. Our next article, a little shorter, Q&A with standout guard Kalia Copper, with the written by Jenna Ortiz for the Arizona Republic. Phoenix Mercury star Kalia Copper has a decorated resume that includes winning an Olympic gold medal at the 2024 Paris Olympics and being named the 2021 WNBA Finals MVP with the Chicago Sky. The North Philadelphia native is one of the last two remaining members from last season's Mercury team and has not shied away from her leadership duties. Whether it's taking the mic to ask head coach Nate Tibbetts about herself during the 2025 Media Day, or guiding younger players, such as guard Monique Akoa-Mokani, Copper has been ever present. Known for her tough downhill play and ability to shoot three-pointers, Copper was the building block for the Mercury's roster overhaul this season, and is one of the big three, with Alyssa Thomas and Satu Sabali. But there's more Copper than just her impressive stats on the court. When she's not hitting game-winning shots at PHX Arena, Copper can be found with her dog or exploring the food scene in Phoenix. So this is a Q&A with Kalia Copper. Question: outside of basketball, what do you enjoy doing? Answer: I enjoy eating, trying different restaurants, sleeping, and spending time with my dog. Question: what topic other than basketball do you know a lot about? Answer: I know a lot about dogs. Question: who is someone who inspires you on or off the court? Answer: my family inspires me off the court, for sure. Question: who is someone you would like to see courtside at a game? Answer: oh, I'd like to see Jalen Hurts, Candace Parker, LeBron James. That's it. That's cool. Question: what would you say is your favorite road city and why? And her answer is, my favorite city is Chicago. Chicago is my favorite road city by far. There's so much to do and so many good things to eat. The weather is always nice. You've got the water as an option. My second favorite city is New York, because my family gets to come. Question, do you have any superstitions? Answer, I'm very superstitious. If I'm getting knocked off even a little bit, it kind of messes me up. I have to take a nap. I don't like to check my phone 30 minutes before the game. Question, what are some of your favorite parts about Phoenix? Answer, my favorite part about Phoenix is certainly not the weather, but the tacos are fire. Oh, I love that it's a different vibe with the West Coast and a different vibe from the city that I'm used to. Question, what music do you prefer to listen to and what's been the most played song or artist for you lately? Answer, oh, I love R&B, and the most played for me right now is definitely Coco Jones. I listen to her whole album, really. Also, Drake's song, Greedy. Question, what's your favorite shoes to wear on the court and off of it? Answer, well, my favorite shoes to wear on the court are my Hardens, and the colorways are crazy, like Volume 8. And off the court, anything Adidas. And that was the article, Q&A with standout guard Kalia Copper. At just past 31 minutes past the hour, it's time for us to get over to the viewpoint section and read some opinions. Well, our first opinion piece is by a guest columnist, Stephen Richer. He used to be the Maricopa County Recorder. He wrote Winds and Wreckage, Winds, W-I-N-S. Here's what he wrote. If you followed Arizona politics the last few years, you might know that I'm a never again Trump conservative. I voted for President Donald Trump in 2020, but I would have preferred any other candidate in the 2024 Republican primary. And I did not vote for Trump in the 2024 election. I will never forgive Trump for January 6, 2021, or for his lies about the 2020 election, or asking the Georgia Secretary of State to find 17,000 votes, or calling me a criminal, or being liable for sexual assault, or his unwillingness to stand up for Vice President Mike Pence, or that he turned his back on the police officers who defended the Capitol, or his equivocation about the immorality of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, or his pay-to-play cryptocurrency scams. However, politics are not always black and white. Yes, much of Trump's first 5 months back in office has been a parade of horribles. That would be pardons of petty criminals, attacks on our judges, the unlawful deportation of many American residents, tariff pandemonium, and interference with private markets. But it's also worth acknowledging that Trump still has an uncanny ability to deliver wins on items of importance to traditional conservatives. Here are a few big ones. Number one, Trump made the border secure. On June 11th, the front page of this newspaper boldly printed, quote, "For the first time in decades, the border is silent," unquote. 1 year ago, in May 2024, the U.S. Border Patrol encountered 117,905 illegal border crossers. Last month, in May 2025, the same patrol officers had only 8,725 encounters with illegal aliens. That's down 93%. Also, fewer drugs are entering the country. Fentanyl seizures are down 54% from last year. Heroin is now more difficult to get into the hands of Americans. We Arizonans spent all of 22 and 23 complaining about the border, but that already feels like a distant memory. Now, border news is about building additional Arizona segments of the border wall. Number two, Trump doesn't mince words about Jewish hate. I don't like the term anti-Semitism. It's too sterile. It allows a level of detachment from what's really going on in the United States, and that is Jewish hate. In 2023, there were 291 hate crimes against Jews in the United States for every 1 million Jews. The second most targeted group, the LGBTQ plus people, came in at 111 hate crimes for every 1 million LGBTQ plus people. Other groups, many of whom are common targets in bigoted hate, came in significantly lower. Muslim, there were 79, black people, 64, Asian people, 17, Hispanic people, 13. In May, homegrown terrorist Elias Rodriguez is accused of shooting and killing a young couple that worked at the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C. Rodriguez told police officers that he performed his executions, quote, for Palestine. I did it for Gaza, unquote. At the beginning of June, Mohammed Sabri Soliman threw Molotov cocktails at a group of Jews in Boulder, Colorado. Soliman said he wanted to kill all Zionist people. Past leaders have minced words about Jewish hate, not President Trump. Anti-Semitism debate is mainstream is number three. So even while he has, ironically, kept close company with many notorious Jew haters and has turned a blind eye to rising Jewish hate among right-wing populists, he has also forced the topic of Jewish hate into the mainstream, and he has prompted introspection where previously there was denial. Consider what the New York Times editorial board wrote on June 14th, quote, "Progressives reject many other forms of hate, even as some tolerate anti-Semitism. College campuses, where Jewish students can face social ostracization, have become the clearest example. Consider the double standard that leads to a fixation on Israel's human rights record and little campus activism about the records of China, Russia, Sudan, Venezuela, or almost any other country. Consider how often left-leaning groups suggest that the world's one Jewish state should not exist and express admiration for Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthis, Iran-backed terrorist groups that brag about murdering," unquote. These are words that probably are not written but for President Trump. Number four, he pushed Europe to step up. Traditional conservatives believe in a strong America that protects American interests abroad and promotes free people, free thinking, and free markets. But we don't have to do it all alone. It's high time that Europe contributes more to its own defense and the defense freedom throughout the world. And they're now starting to do that. Most NATO countries recently announced that they would increase their military spending from 2% to 5% of GDP. And that's a good thing if it happens, and it likely would not have happened without President Trump. Number five, Trump wants to cut taxes. The Republican Party is no longer the party of wealthy business executives. Households earning more than $100,000 voted for Kamala Harris over Trump, 51% to 47%. Despite that, President Trump continues to govern as a tax cutter. His One Big Beautiful Bill extends his massive 2017 individual income tax cuts. It proposes to increase the estate tax exemption, and it adds a number of new tax credits and breaks. Yes, this will likely continue Trump's record of massively adding to the national debt. That's another professed conservative interest. And yes, the big beautiful bill could cut some important government services that might, ironically, disproportionately affect MAGA voters. But in the eyes of many traditional conservatives, there's no such thing as a bad tax cut. Number six, Trump focused debate on intellectual diversity. Trump has also prompted long overdue recognition that intellectual diversity does not exist at many universities. According to a recent article in The Atlantic, quote, "between 30 and 40% of Americans identify as conservative, But as of 2014, conservatives make up only 1 of every 10 professors in academia, and even fewer in the humanities and most social science departments. Of the money donated by Yale faculty political candidates in 2023, for example, 98% went to Democrats, unquote. Duke University's 2024 survey of its faculty found that, quote, 23.2% identified as very liberal, 38.53% identified as somewhat liberal, 24.4% identified as moderates or centrist, 9.9% identified as somewhat conservative, and 3.8% identified as very conservative. Harvard surveyed its faculty in 2022, and they found that, quote, in more than 80% characterized their political leanings as liberal or very liberal, and only 1% of respondents stated they were conservative. No respondents identified as very conservative. Trump has attempted to address this problem through a series of ham-fisted, likely unlawful threats and violations of the First Amendment and breaches of contract. But that doesn't mean that he's wrong, that there is an underlying problem, and people are now looking at it seriously, like in part because Trump has elevated the issues. Does all of this make the Trump presidency worth it? Not in my book. We are flirting with levels of chaos, corruption, unchecked executive power, and lawlessness that this country has not seen in a long time. And it could do real damage to American values. But if I were to say that President Trump has not delivered any wins for traditional conservatives, then I would be denying reality. And that would make me just like Trump following the November 2020 election, something I never want to be. And that was Stephen Richards' opinion piece, Winds and Wreckage. And there's a note here at the bottom. Stephen Richards is a former Maricopa County recorder. He's now a senior fellow at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government's Ash Center, an adjunct scholar at the Cato Institute, and he is CEO of Republic Affairs. That was Winds and Wreckage. I think we have time for a few letters to the editor. That would be opinion pieces written by people like you and me. Our first letter goes like this. What can we do about the West Valley's fighter jet noise? Well, how about trading it out for cargo jet noise? Greater Phoenix is the 5th largest metropolitan area in the United States. The valley is filling up and must make changes to improve the quality of life. To make that happen, we need a win-win Luke solution. As the new Valley microchip plants come online, they will need access to a distribution system to move their products to a worldwide market. With California ports now warehousing their imports in Arizona, predominantly in the West Valley's Loop 303 area, what the West Valley needs is an air cargo terminus. Yes, an air cargo terminus with very, very long runways, just like Luke has in the West Valley. This proposed change could be the solution. Win number one. Win number two could be achieved by relocating the Luke fighter jets to an existing Air Force base in Tucson. With Luke remaining in Arizona, the Luke mission remains the same, and through its fulfillment of mission, the government contracts and economy also remain in Arizona. So, win, win. That was a letter written by J. M. Dalton from Peoria. Our next letter. In the last 40 years, Arizona, particularly Maricopa County, has cut its total water use despite doubling in population. How did we do it? It wasn't low-flow showerheads or 1.6-gallon toilets or desert landscaping or recycling, although they did make modest contributions. Above all, most all of the savings came from replacing water-dependent farmland with residential use. Green lawns, fountains, and swimming pools cannot compete with alfalfa, cotton, and dairy when it comes to squandering water in the desert. Politically, the latest legislative session has agreed to reduce our water consumption in the only way we ever have, by buying out farmers and agribusiness, this time by letting developers purchase water rights to guarantee a 100-year supply. More houses and less alfalfa? Or will they just move farther afield and not really save water? Maybe we should grow cattle feed somewhere where it rains. Signed, Andrew March in Phoenix. And those were the letters to the editor. At coming up on 46 minutes past the hour, we're going to move on over to the entertainment section, and we're going to read today's horoscopes. Well, we're going to begin with the sign of Aries, birth dates from March 21st to April 19th. Are you finding a loophole? You will stumble upon it by accident, but won't immediately appreciate its value. For Taurus, with birth dates from April 20th to May 20th, are you holding off on an impulse buy? You think twice about an item's usefulness. For Geminis, May 21st to June 21st, are you feeling good about your prospects? The day's outlook is favorable. For Cancer, with birth dates from June 22nd through July 22nd, you are not in love with your work today. But does that really matter? Even if you lack direction, stay present. For Leos, birth dates from July 23rd through August 22nd, are you enjoying another person's company? Someone significant gets introduced to your social circle. For you fellow Virgos out there, birth dates from August 23rd through September 22nd, it's all about who you know. A VIP's endorsement opens doors for you. For Libras, September 23rd through October 23rd birth dates, people come into your life for a reason or a season. For Scorpios, October 24th through November 21st birth dates, are you forming an alliance? A business collaboration has a romantic edge. For Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st birth dates, are you finding your rhythm in a partnership? You've got a good thing going. For Capricorns, December 22nd through January 19th, are you lending a hand? A supportive gesture sets things straight at home. For Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th birth dates, how about some lessons in love? A sweet morning encounter affirms that someone can still surprise you. And Pisces, February 18th to March 20th birth dates. Do you have harmony at home? Make your space your sanctuary. That was today's horoscopes. We turn now to letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren. The first letter goes like this. Dear Abby, I recently received a voicemail from my brother that recorded a conversation he was having with his wife. It was clear he didn't know he had accidentally dialed my phone during this conversation. It was an argument which lasted 2 minutes before there was a pause in the conversation and he hung up. I haven't addressed it with him yet because I'm shocked at my sister-in-law's behavior during this conversation and the way she treats my brother. I have known for a while that she blames others for situations she should share the blame in, but I had never heard her in a private conversation until this voicemail. My brother must know those 2 minutes live on my phone, although we haven't spoken about it. I want to talk with him and tell him that I heard what she said. I'd like him to know I hope she treats him with respect and that she sounds ungrateful for all the hard work he puts in at his job in their one-income household with 2 children. So how should I handle this? Signed, Overheard in California. And Abby responds, Dear Overheard, talk to your brother. Express that the fight between him and his wife was partially recorded on your phone. Tell him you didn't mean to pry, but you think he and his wife could benefit from marital counseling if they're both willing. I hope he will listen and have some sessions, even if his wife refuses. Our next letter goes, Dear Abby, my husband and I are retired. He sits in his recliner all day every day. He says he is studying his Bible or watching YouTube videos. He also sleeps 12 to 14 hours after he goes to bed around 8 p.m. most nights. This has been going on for at least a year, and I am sick of it. I want a companion to do things with. Nothing I have done or said motivates him to get up and move. Since I'm not willing to accept this lifestyle for myself, I take classes at the Y 3 to 5 times a week, go to lunch with friends, read and attend your neighborhood book club, paint, do crafts, and talk with or email friends. Most nights, I watch TV upstairs by myself. I may as well be single. Do you have any suggestions? Signed, Uncoupled in South Carolina. Abby responds, Dear Uncoupled, get that husband of yours to his doctor for a thorough physical and neurological examination. People of every age need some form of exercise. When people who weren't sedentary spend all day every day sitting, it is dangerous to their health. Your husband could suffer from any number of ailments, including depression. Making sure he's been checked out could be life-changing, not only for him, but also for you. And don't forget, Dear Abby is written by Abigail Van Buren, who is also known as Jean Phillips, and the article was founded by her mother, Pauline Phillips. You can contact Abigail two ways. One way is to go to her website, www.dearabby.com, or you can write her a letter and mail it to P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. And that was the letters of advice from Abigail Van Buren. Well, it's time now to take a look at some comics. In the comic strip Peanuts, featuring good old Charlie Brown, drawn by Schultz. In the first frame, it looks like this whole strip is about Marcy and Peppermint Patty. And Peppermint Patty's in front, and she's got a backpack on, and Marcy's behind her, and she's got a backpack on. And Marcy says, This is the first time I've ever gone backpacking, sir. The next frame, Peppermint Patty says, Try to think of it as a learning experience, Marcy. And the next frame, Marcy says, Should I be looking for relics, sir? And Peppermint Patty says, Oh, by all means, maybe you'll find something valuable. On the next frame, Marcy says, as she holds up her hand, How about this, sir? Would this be a piece of armor from the suit of an Inca warrior? Peppermint Patty looks at it and says, That's a pull tab from a Diet Cola can, Marcy. Well, I'm going to keep looking, sir. And Peppermint Patty heads off and says, Well, that's fine. Maybe someday you'll become a great archaeologist. And in the next frame, Marcy says, Sir, I think I found something important this time, sir. And Peppermint Patty says, How could you find anything there, Marcy? You're standing in a parking lot. And in the last frame, Marcy says, You don't think this could be an Indian arrowhead? And it's a big white arrow painted on the parking lot, indicating the direction to drive. And that was Peanuts. And in the comic strip Baby Blues, drawn by Jerry Scott and Rick Kirkman, in the first frame, it looks like Dad, Harold, is outside sitting in the backyard on the patio with his son, Hammy. They're both in easy chairs. And Dad says, When I was your age, my dad gave me some advice. And Hammy says, What did he say? In the next frame, Harold says, He said that the way to win in life was to get a good education. In the next frame, otherwise, I might end up digging ditches. And now Hammy looks surprised and says, really? Dig ditches? And Dad says, yeah. Then Hammy says, are we talking shovel or backhoe or a bulldozer? Maybe tunnels? Oh, I'd love to dig a tunnel. And in the next frame, Hammy yells, Mom, I'm quitting school. It's Dad's idea. Dad grabs him by the shirt and says, let's try this again. And that was Baby Blues. Well, before we go, we ought to wish happy birthday to some celebrities who should be celebrating today. Let's see. The oldest one is the 14th Dalai Lama, Tenzin Gyatso. He turned 90 today. The singer Gene Chandler turns 88. The singer Jeannie Seely turns 85. The actor Burt Ward, I think if I remember right, he played Robin in the Batman TV series. Burt Ward turns 80 today. Former President George W. Bush turns 79. Actor Sylvester Stallone turns 79 today. Comic book artist John Byrne, that's B-Y-R-N-E, he turns 75. The actor Jeffrey Rush, he turns 74. The actor Casey Sander turns 69. The actress Jennifer Saunders turns 67. And the actor Brian Posehn turns 59. The actor Glenn Scarpelli turns 59. And rapper Inspecta Deck with the Wu-Tang Clan, he turns 55 today. And actors Tia and Tamara Mowry turns 47. And comedian and actor Kevin Hart turns 46 today. Oh, and there's actress Eva Green. She turns 45 today. Congratulations and happy birthday. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. And you have been listening to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Sunday, July 6th, 2025. Have a great day.